Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Guy Geese with the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR Power Talk Radio for Revenue Marketing Leaders. We meet to talk to real revenue marketers, to learn their tips and tricks on how they've made that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. And our topic today is really of great interest to all revenue marketers. Today, we are going to talk about the talent gap. And the talent gap in the revenue marketing age encompasses both leadership, meaning where do leaders go to learn the new skills that they need, as well as the talent gap that's on your team. And if you think about it, the job of the marketing leader is more complex than ever before. And taking the time to learn what new skills they need and also taking the time to build out a team with the right skills, most days it almost seems like an impossible task. The skills required for successful marketing today include things like data and technology and analytics. But guess what? These marketers also have to have some business acumen. They have to have really great collaboration and relationship skills. And exactly where are you supposed to find this perfect person? So my panel today will be discussing questions like, how does the marketing leader improve her skill set? Where do you find talent for your team? What talent do you need? How do you develop that talent? And I'll even ask them a question around, what do they think the role of the academic organizations needs to be in filling that talent gap as well? The thing that we do know is this. The success of every marketing organization hinges upon having the right talent in the right place and at the right time. So joining me today for this important conversation are two very experienced marketing leaders and veterans of the revenue marketing talent wars. We have Liz Sufaya, who is the Senior Vice President of Marketing for Hodges Mace. Liz, welcome to the show.
Hi, Debbie. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And we have Amanda Wolf, who is Senior Director of Marketing for Elsevier. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Hi, Debbie. Thanks for having me as well.
So I have to tell you guys that I was so pleased when both Liz and Amanda, of all the people I could have asked on the show, agreed to be here for two reasons. Number one, they are veterans of the revenue marketing talent war. They've been at this for quite some time. And also because they have a lot of passion for finding the right people and also getting the right skills. So let's begin by learning a little bit more about their backgrounds. So Liz, tell us a little bit about your background as a revenue marketer and what you do today.
Sure. So I feel old when I tell this story because I've been in marketing for over 22 years, but I've only been a revenue marketer for about 8 years. And I have been on both client side, PAC side, and touched a lot of different industries. However, one of the common denominators has been that I've been involved in technology throughout most of the career. And so one of my passion points, and I'm so grateful to be talking about today, is really how to build that rock star team, how to get the right talent, and how to align the right skill set. So over the course of the years, I've learned a lot, and I'm just excited for the conversation today.
And tell us about your current role.
Sure. So current role, I am the Senior Vice President of Marketing with Hodges Mace, and we are an employee benefits communications company. So we handle the technology side of enrolling in your benefits, and we also handle the service side of enrolling in your benefits. So we provide one-on-one counseling and advice and guidance and thought leadership throughout that whole process. My role here is very interesting because prior to my role with Hodges Mace, they did not have any revenue marketing department whatsoever. So it was a build-it-from-scratch scenario, and we are 1 year into our journey.
Well, Liz, you have a penchant for looking for those opportunities. I think this is either the second or the third time you've built a revenue marketing organization from scratch.
It's true, and I think I'm addicted. There's an adrenaline that goes along with knowing what the ultimate outcome can be, but you also have to have a very secure patience, because it does take a while to get the right folks on board, but to also get, you know, your marketing technology stack, your people, your processes, and then most important, alignment and adoption throughout the organization.
That is so true. And we'll talk more about that in just a few minutes. So, Amanda, tell our listening audience a little bit about your background and your journey as a revenue marketer.
Sure. So one of the things that we'll probably talk about at some point today when we talk about that rock star team, like Liz was mentioning, is the balance between the art and the science of marketing. And I feel like my experience has really kind of fallen in both of those buckets over my career. So I started it as a copywriter and production artist working on the creative side of the profession. Then I moved into sales and various marketing management roles. And those roles became much more data-driven and eventually became progressively more digital in nature, and then ultimately revenue marketing focused. So now I see both of those capacities. I oversee the revenue marketing engine, but that covers both that right brain and left brain of the marketing profession. So I lead the marketing technology and the analytics team at Elsevier. It's a nursing and health education information solutions provider. And then I also lead the digital marketing, kind of marketing operations side, as well as creative services and the MarCom teams, which are more creative in nature, content marketing, segmentation, campaign strategy, that sort of thing.
You know, I talk to a lot of marketing leaders, and they often have both that right brain and that left brain part of the marketing organizations report to them. And it really takes a leader at the top who understands both sides to be successful. So let's go into our next topic, which is really all about leadership development. In the second part of the show, we'll talk about how do you find the talent for your team. But I'm very interested in hearing from both of you. And the question would be, as a revenue marketing leader, what are the key skills and characteristics that you think are most necessary for success? And let's start with Liz.
Sure. So the key skills and characteristics that are most necessary for revenue marketing success, Deb, I would say obviously the right brain, left brain capabilities come into play quite strongly here. But I think when I look to hire someone, obviously that's table stakes. They have to have the analytical side with the creative side, but they have to change management.
Liz?
Yes?
Liz, I want your skills, not your team skills.
Oh, my skills. I'm sorry.
Yeah, your skills. Oh, no, that's okay. When you think about yourself as a leader, what are the skills and characteristics of a leader in revenue marketing?
Sure. I think it's a change management agent. I think that when you come into an organization, you are the evangelist for what your team does, and it's your responsibility to align with the right folks, the CFO, and the sales leader, and make sure that those ties are strong, that they understand what you're doing. I think you are the chief negotiator for your team, and you are constantly having to explain and, you know, make a case for what you do if it's new to your organization.
I couldn't agree more. I think that change agent is absolutely critical to the role of today's leaders in revenue marketing and in modern marketing. And earlier this year, we actually had Liz on WRMR on another show, and she actually brought her CFO with her. And it's just a great example of how you have to align to leadership, and you have to have that vision, and you have to be that change agent. So I would agree with that, Liz. Amanda, from a leadership perspective, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, it's table stakes to be in partnership with your sales leader. I mean, I used to laugh, you know, when people would say, well, sales and marketing have to be in alignment. That it's funny that it's even talked about anymore, because you just have to do that. But I think being in alignment with your CFO is more critical than ever.
I would completely agree with that. So same question to you, Amanda. What do you think are those necessary skills and characteristics to be a leader of a revenue marketing practice?
Well, I mean, I couldn't agree more with both of you that being a change agent is critical. I don't think that you can implement this type of dramatic shift in the way a business does their marketing if you're not able to not only change and implement technology and operational issues quickly, but also be able to motivate your team and be able to drive them toward change. But I would add that I think a certain amount of business acumen or political savvy is really necessary. Negotiation skills and advocacy on behalf of your team. But I think fundamental for me is this notion of being driven for results. Because if you if you're just striving for excellence, that's not enough. And you know, Yoda says it best, right? Like, do or do not. There is no try.
Yeah.
It's true. If you're just trying to be good, you're not going to be good. So that to me is fundamental, to be able to push my team and myself to be the best that we can be.
So let me just kind of give a summary of some of the characteristics that I heard. It was a change agent, someone who's very collaborative and can align across functions, someone that has a vision and a passion, someone with business acumen. And Amanda, I loved your comment around political skills and negotiation skills. I think I've heard Liz talk about those before as well. And then, of course, someone driven to results. And I think those are key characteristics of the marketing leaders today. Let's think about your journey as a marketing leader. How did you get educated on all of this? You know, there are so many new things going on in marketing, you know, whether it's the drive to financial accountability or whether it's new technologies or whether it's going from right brain to left brain. How did you become knowledgeable as a leader for this space? And let's start with Liz.
Sure. So, Debbie, sorry if it sounds like a shameless plug for you or for the Pudowitz Group, but that's actually where I started. You were the first person to educate me on this, and then throughout working with the Pudowitz Group, I learned quite a bit. Now, in addition to that, I've been able to complement that foundational skill set with folks like Serious Decisions, specific CMO-type roundtables, and other technology and revenue marketing events.
Okay. Amanda, what about you? How did you educate yourself?
Well, Pudowitz Group gets to take some credit here for me as well, because I was really green stepping into the marketing automation space, although I had a fair amount of digital marketing experience. And so you guys really were my first exposure to it. But ultimately, it comes down to one question. Are you intellectually curious? And in my case, I am. So the resources are really there for the taking. I would second what Liz said about roundtables and peer-to-peer interactions. I think, events like your marketing automation summits, like Marketo Summit, are a great opportunity to talk with like-minded individuals and to get exposure. But I think one of the other great opportunities in our industry, especially, is that content marketing provides resources for professional development. We're doing it for our audiences and for our customers, but those of us in our field are doing it to me. So that provides a wealth of opportunity for me to dig in and learn more. But definitely robust conversations and dialogues with other revenue marketers like Liz and yourself are great opportunities to progress my knowledge even further.
And I do love seeing a whole lot more attention being paid to marketing leaders, you know, not just the power users and, you know, and the team, but actually leadership, you know, themselves. I think that's incredibly important. And I have to go back to a comment you made, Amanda. You were talking about, you know, are you intellectually curious? I'm actually writing an article right now, and the name of the article is Why B2B CMOs Are Failing. And the article really spun out of some research I was doing that showed that, you know, 70-75% of all CMOs are being pressured to have financial accountability, yet still less than a third can actually show with credibility that they can deliver ROI and financial accountability. And so I think a lot of CMOs are kind of in free fall. And Amanda, one of the things that I said was because they are not intellectually curious. They really have their head in the sand. So I would agree with you. And I think if you're not intellectually curious, it's just not going to work. I'll share with you one other conversation. I was talking to the CMO of India. She's the CMO for Microsoft in India. And she had a pretty long career in marketing, and they call it modern marketing at Microsoft. And she said, Debbie, I had to unlearn what I thought I knew. And I think if you're intellectually curious, I think that kind of comes along. So both of you had talked about the types of events and things that you've done around educating yourself as leaders. Is there anything that you would like to see when it comes to educating leaders that you haven't found in the market? Liz? Liz, are you there?
Yes, okay. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh,
yeah,
you can.
I think one of the gaps when folks are coming into the workplace is they don't have negotiating skills or the ability to sell things internally. So they might come in with the on-paper skills or the right attitude, or they know something about tactical things, but the ability to navigate internal politics and make a business case for something that they're doing, I think, is a gap that exists today.
Oh, I like that a lot. Amanda, do you have any thoughts what you'd like to
hear? Totally agree. Yeah, totally agree. You know, that's something that I think as you progress professionally in your career, you know, you take those hits because you just really aren't politically savvy. And eventually you find your way through it. But it would be fantastic if there was that type of professional coaching that happens. I think another piece that's really important of that is to know your brand. That goes along with knowing your audience. How do people not only perceive you, but how do you use that perception to your advantage? Those are some things that I think can hold people back when it comes to leadership opportunities.
Well, you
say
know
your
brand. You mean your personal brand, right, Amanda?
Correct. Yeah, your personal
okay.
brand. Exactly.
Okay. Liz?
Yeah, I was just going to add, you know, that's funny. One of our core values here is your brand is what makes our brand great. And I had an amazing revenue marketer that Debbie knows. I won't name the person, but they were so good at what they did, but they couldn't read people. And when you went into the room, they knew what they were doing. They were very, very bright, but they would walk out of the room and say, I think that went great. They didn't connect at all. They have no idea what you're talking about. So I think bridging the gap between the knowledge and the know-how with how to align your peers and the stakeholders is huge.
Yeah, it is. And again, that gets back to, you know, there was a study out a few years ago, and they were took a look at all the job boards for marketing managers, and they were trying to ascertain what were the top couple of traits for hiring. And it was the ability to influence and collaborate because, you know, marketing is not a siloed function. It works across many, many different groups. And so, and again, I think especially as a leader, your brand and your ability to politically navigate is incredibly important. Well, thank you so much for those answers around leadership development. Let's now turn to, I know, what your favorite topic is, and that's finding and growing talent for your team. And so here's the question for both of you. As a marketing leader, how would you describe the challenge of finding talent? And we'll start with Amanda.
Oh, man, that's a loaded question. I wish there was a magic bullet for finding talent. You know, I find that most of the people that I interview, especially for more of the entry-level roles that we hire, are just not job-ready for revenue marketing organizations right out the gate. They're taught about traditional marketing in school, but they may not have even heard about marketing automation. You know, I did a guest lecture in a course, and it was an email marketing course, and there was no content at all in the curriculum about marketing automation. So that was the topic for just, you know, one lecture. But man, to come out and then to have to do that as a profession, that's daunting. There are definitely senior candidates out there that have the experience, but they are rare. I'm sure Liz would attest to that, and also very expensive. So that's a challenge, how to balance budget and financial requirements with really trying to find qualified, highly educated staff that are ready to go from day one.
And we'll talk more about skills and roles and kind of how you hire for that. But let me ask Liz to comment on the challenge of finding talent as well.
Well, the challenge of finding talent, I feel like a broken record, but it's that combination of attitude and aptitude. You have to have the right on-paper skills, and you have to have the right attitude. You have to be a great cultural fit. And so oftentimes, times when recruiters are involved, they can send you one or the other, but not both. And so, you know, finding that unicorn that can come in and make and forge relationships at your company and do their job quickly, efficiently, and be well-liked and well-respected, that to me is the tough one. It's easy to find one or the other, but it's that unique combination of attitude and aptitude that is very challenging to find.
It is a unicorn.
It is. They're rare. They're very rare because it's such a combination of skills that are required. So let me ask both of you this. Where do you source talent from? Do you use recruiters? Do you use your personal networks? I mean, where do you find the talent? Liz?
Sure. So I usually pick up the phone and call two or three people in the network, in my own network that I know, and say, hey, do you know anyone who might fit this model? So I start with peer referrals, and then I usually call my go-to recruiter and tell them that what I'm looking for. And usually it's a combination of getting candidates from both those pools.
Okay. Amanda, what about you? Where do you go to find talent?
Yeah, the exact same kind of approach. I think you have to talk internally with your network and then also, you know, work through the recruiters. But I would also emphasize the importance of crafting a really compelling job description, you know, using the out-of-the-box job descriptions that may come from your HR team. It may not necessarily call the candidates that you're really, really looking for. So I also really try to focus a lot of time on that. I find that it saves me a lot of time down the road.
You know what's really interesting about this conversation? I would say 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, there weren't a whole lot of recruiters that could help you with this, right? And it was really all about peer networking. And both of you were lucky because you've been doing this for a while. And I know Liz, especially, as she you know, comes into a new organization, she's very well connected and she could bring those in. But thank goodness there are at least some recruiters around these days that know what you're talking about and can help fill that need for talent. So let me ask you this. Whenever you have an open job rec, how long does it take you to fill it? Let's start with Liz.
Wow, that's a great question. Sometimes it can take up to 4 to 6 months. If I get a good peer referral, it's much shorter, but it can drag on if I'm using outside help.
Okay. Amanda, what about for you?
You know, in my case, what I lean very heavily on are my internal employees, and I tend to promote from within as often as possible. So I tend to focus on nurturing talent in-house and trying to advance them and put them up and then backfill lower level positions. So it usually doesn't take me that long. I would say, you know, 2-3 months max.
Okay.
Well, I would echo what Amanda says about, I mean, we always try to promote from within. That is usually our first go-to if we have the right skill set. But in a marketing organization that's newer to revenue marketing, that can be a little bit more challenging.
Yep, that's absolutely right. So let's turn the conversation to what kind of skills are you looking for? And Amanda, why don't you share with us some skills that you're looking for?
Sure. I mean, I think the thing that I look for most now are generalists, people that can be slotted into a variety of different functions. I think those are the hardest to find, unfortunately, but I want the person who can help with a dashboard, but also get on Twitter for me with the latest thought leadership piece, or, you know, someone who's poised with the collaboration and political savvy that we talked about before, but is also data-driven and ROI-focused. So it's a hard skill set to find, but I'm looking for someone like that has, of course, it's kind of table stakes, but the right brain, left brain conversation, like Liz was talking about earlier, I'm trying to find someone that's data-driven but still has powerful communication skills.
Liz, what do you look for?
Sure. I always joke that I need a generalist specialist. So I need someone who can do a lot of things. Like what Amanda said, I need you to be able to write content. I need you to be able to be active with social. But at the heart of what I really need is I need someone who can take data and provide recommendations. I need someone who can look at the data and come to me and say, hey, these are the trends I'm seeing, and here's some thoughts on how we might want to address it.
So how important is data skills or analytical skills for the folks that you hire, Amanda?
Extremely important. I don't think that you can call yourself a revenue marketer if everybody's not on the same page when it comes to analytics. I do struggle sometimes with that because we see people that are really, really strong in the communication arts that maybe, you know, may not feel comfortable really talking about analytics. But I don't think that they need to be, you know, digging into the data day in and day out to be able to give me insights, which I think is at the core of what Liz was saying. Even a copywriter can still give me insights about how they can work more efficiently and effectively. So they don't necessarily need to be a statistician to be able to do that.
So yeah, and I would agree with that. You know,
go ahead, Liz.
I was just going to add that, you know, when I have someone run a report out of Salesforce, I always say, and before they put it on my desk, I'll say, what's the Cliff Notes version? Give me the summary of what you just pulled for me and tell me what I'm looking for. So, you know, I'll say how many leads, conversions, you know, so they know now to give me that soundbite, that Cliff Notes version before they hand anything over.
So do either one of you have an example of something you do during your hiring process that helps you ascertain if they have analytical acumen or not?
I have the meet with the CFO.
Oh, well, tell us about that.
Well, so in our hiring process, we usually put together a panel of different skill sets around the organization. And because we're hiring revenue marketers and they need analytical background, we'll include the CFO or a member of his team on our interview panel. And that way they can ask certain questions that are unique to their needs in terms of reporting or providing metrics for the board, and we can gauge where they are.
I love that. Amanda, is there anything that you guys do special as part of the interview process to ascertain those analytical skills?
Well, I mean, other than really pushing for more advanced Excel skills, I think that's probably our take, especially when we're looking at more of these entry-level roles that I typically staff. You know, having somebody who's comfortable with VLOOKUPs and pivot tables, that automatically tells me that they've got a little bit more experience on the data side than somebody that, you know, maybe spent all their time doing PowerPoints, but has just kind of, you know, glossed over Excel. So I think it varies depending on the role that you're trying to fill, but Liz's approach is a really clever one.
Yeah, I think so too. So think about your hiring strategy. And Liz, I heard you talk about you're going to hire people that have, what were the two words that you used?
Attitude and aptitude. Yeah.
And I think I heard, Amanda, you saying that, you know, you try to hire internally or you hire younger people that can be groomed. So if you think about your overarching hiring strategy to get talent on your team, how would you describe it? Is it hiring millennials? Is it, you know, just always growing from within? Is it, you know, find the best talent and bring it in? So what is kind of like your strategic approach to finding talent? Let's start with Liz.
You know, our strategy, and I've been doing this for years, Deb, it's more of a holistic approach. I will have that person interview with members of the team, but then, like I said, we have an expanded panel. But to me, at the end of the day, when we are reviewing that person's skill set, it's that whole innovation matters. We want you to bring bright ideas to the table, but your execution matters more. What you deliver, the impression you leave with folks, all of that matters more. We do things like, I will even the receptionist. I've been doing this for probably 15 years. How did this person treat you when they came into our office? Because if that person is off in any way on their interview, I want to know.
Liz? Oh, I think Liz, we just let you know we can't hear you. You may want to hang up and dial back in. Amanda, let's talk about your strategy. Yes. Is that Amanda?
No, that was Liz. I think we lost her and got her back and her again.
Oh, you're back,
I'm
Liz.
Still on.
Okay, so you were telling us
I didn't
you dropped. I'm so sorry.
So you were talking about innovation is important, but execution is key, and talking to the receptionist.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team approach. We want to make sure that there are a dozen or so people that feel good about bringing someone on and joining a culture.
And I do think, because it's such an incredible, important thing to hire the right person, I like that approach. Amanda, how would you characterize your hiring strategy for revenue marketing talent?
Sure. You know, I talked a lot about grooming talent from within, and that really is our approach. You know, I spend a lot of time trying to get my team to work beyond their current role, to groom them and try to mentor them in advanced functions or advanced skills that may not necessarily be critical to their current job description as it's defined on paper, but that it opens them up for opportunities for advancement should other roles in the organization higher than the current role comes available. When we do that, then we're able to backfill. And when I'm looking for, in that case, are typically people right out of college or millennials, but I'm looking for people in particular that have, and it's that same phrase we used earlier, intellectual curiosity. It's people who are interested in technology, who are on the kind of the cusp of what's happening in technology today, that they're learning, that they're reading, that they're spending time, you know, they're reading Wired or some of the other, you know, tech magazines that are out. They're interested, but they're also strong communicators, and they're presenting themselves in professional ways, of course, but that they also have those communication skills that'll help them advance and learn and grow in their role.
Yeah, I'm with you, Amanda. Anytime you can grow talent from within, because you know what their communication, you know those collaboration skills already, and it's just and it's a lovely thing to do is to bring people along and help them have a career. So I love that approach as well. So let's turn to, now that you have the talent hired, how do you develop and grow the talent? And Amanda, you talked a few minutes about some of the things that you do. So perhaps you could expand a little bit more about how you continue to develop talent.
Sure. You know, one of the things, starting this team kind of from scratch, similar to what Liz was just talking about before, about being a brand new revenue marketing organization, starting from scratch gives you the flexibility to restructure your team to suit their talents and needs. And so that's been a lot of what we've been doing over the last couple of years. And I think that that's been key to help people pick up the slack where some people have strengths and weaknesses. So nurturing people to go along an approach that with the skill set that they're strong in, having them dig into marketing automation and learn more advanced functions, for example, if that's a passion, where others might be more well suited to, you know, to other types of communications efforts, campaign strategy, for example. So I tend to shift roles and responsibilities around pretty fluidly based on the staff that we have in place at the time. And that allows them to mentor each other and grow in their roles, I think, more rapidly than if they're working solely against, you know, more of that generalist capacity. Now, that said, the people that you wind up finding then that are truly generalists that can do anything, I could slot them into any one of those roles, those are the ones that I think have the most potential, and they have the capability to advance into higher level roles more quickly.
So again, I love the idea of having people in different roles and having them do different things and having them learn from experience. And I think, Liz, you have a pretty unique way that you bring people on board to help them acclimate. You want to tell our listeners about what you do the first, 4 or 5 weeks that your new hire's on board?
Sure. So our hiring process, we don't really let them touch a lot of marketing stuff until they spend time with sales and looking at product demos, listening to customer feedback, listening to prior interviews with executives. We really put them through a couple of week training program just on the industry, hearing what prospects have to say, looking at competitor sites, and then we kind of bring them over to the marketing side and let them have some foundational knowledge before we really put them to work. We also invest in a lot of training for them. So if there are conferences they want to attend that are industry and marketing specific, we will find ways to fund that. And then we have internal development programs around leadership and communication styles and writing, you know, that we offer everyone. So pretty rich talent development here.
And I do think it's one of the most important aspects of being a marketing leader today is taking the time and ensuring that you have the investment in your team, because these skills are so incredibly specialized these days. And so both of you presented some really, really great ideas for that. So let me ask a question that's on the other side. What do you find most challenging about developing talent? Because it's not always the easiest thing in the world to do. Why don't we start with Liz?
I think time is always, you know, you get so busy and buried and you want to sit down and coach people. I always like to take the approach of here's what you did well and here are the opportunities. But I would say one of the biggest roadblocks in developing talent is when people are resistant to feedback. And, you know, you can give feedback until you're blue in the face, but until that person can humble themselves and accept that, it's hard to impart change. So I think it boils down to having the time and carving out time as a leader to develop your talent, to make sure that you are giving them kudos for the things that they've done well and offering them some kind of opportunity to talk through and coach them on things that didn't go as well.
You know, I hate to say this. I hate to admit it, but in my younger days, boy, did I hate feedback. I was so resistant to feedback. I know that's hard to imagine, but at some point in my life, it finally dawned on me, what a gift to get feedback. So I completely agree, and that can be hard for people. Amanda, what kind of challenges do you have?
Oh, I would agree with that. I think you've got to be able to have team members who are willing to challenge themselves and grow professionally. If you can't develop them, it's not a one-sided thing. They have to develop themselves. You can provide them opportunities for that, but they have to work to be able to do that. So I think that's probably the biggest barrier. And you know, especially in organizations that weren't necessarily revenue marketing organizations from the beginning, you're also working with talent that, you know, is from another time, from another industry, and you have to work with them in their own strengths and weaknesses to try to get them to move along with you on that journey. And that can be painful and hard to do, for sure, for everyone. But I'm happy to say that everybody that I've been working with is really, you know, has really risen to the challenge.
Deb, you know, when you talked about what are the gaps in the education today, I think learning how to ask for.
Okay, Liz, you cut out again. But I'm betting she was going to say learning how to ask for feedback. Liz?
Can you not hear me?
We can hear you now.
Deb?
You just went out for just a moment.
We can
I
hear
don't
you
know
now.
Why
I'm doing that. I'm not moving at all. Yes, I think one of the gaps in training students and putting them into the workforce is learning how to ask for and accept feedback and how to impart change after that.
Excellent. Okay. Here's a question I have of great interest. And Amanda, you were talking about teaching a class at an academic institution. I also do one class a year at the College of William and Mary in the MBA program. And this is the sixth year in a row that I've taught that class. It's a half-day seminar lecture. And last year was the first year that people knew what a CRM was. This was the first year some people knew what a marketing automation system was. And so my question to you is, what do you think the role of our academic institutions needs to be in addressing this talent gap? I'm going to start with Amanda.
Sure. So, you know, I don't think that the academic institutions are ever going to be able to educate on the latest technology, for example. I don't think that, you know, they're going to be able to train someone how to come out and be certified in marketing automation right after graduation. The technology changes too rapidly, and it's going to be outdated within a year of that person graduating anyway. That I don't ever see as being a necessity, frankly. The technology can be learned, but I think the principles and the strategy and the thoughtfulness around what revenue marketing is and what the marketing world is like today is definitely a gap, and that's something that I'd like to see addressed in more curriculums. Now, granted, so much of this is B2B focused, and a lot of degrees are still very B2C heavy, but the jobs are in both areas, and I think that we need to do a better job educating our new graduates on the B2B space, as well as, you know, really how to implement a revenue marketing model and that sort of thing in the world today. So that's what I would suggest.
You are preaching to the choir, sister. I could not agree more. Liz, what are your thoughts on what you think the role of our academic organizations need to be in helping address the gap in talent?
I think they have to be really of intern programs. We are very supportive of that, bringing folks in and putting them on the technology. And if they're good at what they do, then we'll bring them back during their breaks throughout the year so that they continue to grow. The school should allow for that, encourage that, and help foster that with local businesses so that the kids can come out with practical hands-on experience to the degree that they can grasp that during their college year. Because for me to invest in an intern and then be able to hire them when they graduate is well worth it.
Well, I agree. We've got an intern staffed right now, and I see the exact same benefit. I 100% agree.
And it's not just learning the technology. It's the exposure, right? And then seeing how they respond to being exposed to the world of revenue marketing versus the world of the four Ps. And again, we've used interns the same way and also with really, really, really great success.
Well, to be honest, we've had a mix of success, good and bad. but what we do with our interns is rather than just have them fully in marketing, we split their time in thirds between sales, finance, and marketing so they see the whole picture.
Oh, I like that. That's a great idea as well. I think that's a really, really great idea. You know, I could talk for a long time about what I think is wrong with our academic institutions, but I think that both of you have hit on really, really the core of the issue. I love the idea of doing the intern programs. And I agree with you, Amanda, that, you know, they have to have exposure to this world somehow, and not everything is B2C. There's a very vibrant, you know, B2B marketing world out there. All right, ladies, final question. Let's say that you're sitting at a really nice bar in San Francisco. You're overlooking the bay. You're having a glass of wine after a long day at a conference or with a client. And sitting down next to you is, guess what? Another marketing leader, and you begin chatting. And they look at you and they say, wow, you know, we're really just beginning this journey. What kind of advice do you have for me in finding the right talent? What would you say, Liz?
Wow. Don't be scared of millennials. I think, all kidding aside, I think there's millennials get such a bad rap, but I've learned so much from talking with millennials and hiring millennials. I think that the talent challenge, you have to allow your folks to fail up. You have to provide environments for them where they can learn and you can coach them and you can get them to that next level. I think patience is one of the biggest challenges as a revenue marketing leader because you've been there, you've done it, you've made those mistakes, and you've learned from those mistakes. So I think having that patience in your team and building that team is a key attribute.
I think that's great advice. Amanda, what would
you say? I would agree with that, especially, you know, because I've hired several millennials myself. But I would go on to say that when you've hired a team, you usually can find one or two people that you really feel like you can trust. And if you can trust all of your team, that's even better. But I would say that trust is critical in growing an organization. It's very difficult when you're dictating down and you don't have a two-way flow of communication with people that you can trust on your team. They're the ones who ultimately, you know, are going to help with success and also teach me and make me better. So I would say, you know, find the people in your team that you really can trust and nurture them and invest in them. Ultimately, if you can expand your team out like I feel like I have today, where everybody, you know, is really trustworthy. And I know that if I give them an assignment or a project, even if it's something they've never done before, that they're going to kill it. That's ultimately what makes for a successful organization. They'll go with you. They'll go on the journey with you to a revenue marketing organization.
Completely agree, Amanda. Liz, I think these are great comments, and I think it's absolutely spot on advice. So our time is at an end, and I want to thank you both so much for being on the program today. Thank you for sharing your insights and your experiences, both the good and the bad. I'm sure that all our listeners found today very valuable, and our future listeners will also find great value. So thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Debbie.
And for all our listeners, please plan to join us again. And remember, you can download all these interviews from iTunes or listen from your computer at Revenue Marketer Radio. Thanks, everybody, and it is a great day to be a revenue marketer. See you next time.